नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Canto 3, Chapter 16. We're going to read two verses this morning. They're connected. And we'll chant text 20 and then read 21.
Yam lai vibhutir upayat yuvaninam anyayar
Yam lai
vibhutir upayat yuvaninam anyayar Atarti bhisva shirasa Danyarti thamri tulasi navadama thamno Madhubratapater iva kamayana Yam vai vibhutir upayat yuvalenam anyayar Athardi bhisva shirasadati palareno Yarpitangri Tulasi Navadama Dhamno Tokam Madhu Pratapater Iva Kamayana
Yam Whom?
Vai
Certainly
Vibhutihi
Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune.
Upayati
waits upon.
Anuvelam
occasionally.
Anyai
by others.
Artha
material facility.
Artibhi
by those who desire.
Svachirasa
on their own heads.
Dhrita
accepting.
Pada
of the feet.
Renuhu
the dust.
Danya
by the devotees.
Arpita
offered.
Angri
at your feet.
Tulasi
of tulasi leaves.
Nava
fresh.
Dhamma
on the garland.
Dhamnava
having a place.
Lokam
the place.
Madhuprata patehe
of the king of the bees.
Iva
like.
Kamayana
is anxious to secure. Very nice verse. Poetic, so you have to listen carefully. The goddess of fortune Lakshmi, the dust of whose feet is worn on the heads by others, waits upon you as appointed. For she is anxious to secure a place in the abode of the king of bees. What's the abode of the king of bees? The tulsi buds that are adorning the feet of the Lord. So, she is anxious to secure a place in the abode of the king of bees who hovers on the fresh wreath of tulsi leaves offered at your feet by some blessed devotee. I mean, that's poetic. You gotta read it a few times to really capture that. I'll read the purport, read the verse again. Purport. As previously described, Tulasi, has attained all superior qualities due to her being placed at the lotus feet of the Lord. The comparison made here is very nice. As the king of beings hovers over the tulsi leaves offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, so Lakshmi, the goddess who is sought after by the demigods, brahmanas, vaishnavas, and everyone else, always engages in rendering service to the lotus feet of the Lord. The conclusion is that no one can be the benefactor of the Lord. Everyone is actually the servant of the servant of the Lord. So I'll read the next verse and come back to this poetic verse. Text 21 reads, O Lord, you are exceedingly attached to the activities of your pure devotees, yet you are never attached to the goddess of fortune who is constantly engaged in your transcendental loving service. How can you be purified, therefore, by the dust of the path traversed by the brahmanas? And how can you be glorified or made fortunate by the mark of Sri Vatsa on your chest? Purport. It is said in the Brahma Samhita that the Lord is always served by many hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune in his Vaikuntha planet. Yet because of his attitude of renunciation of all opulences, he is not attached to any one of them. The Lord has 6 opulences, unlimited wealth, unlimited fame, unlimited strength, unlimited beauty, unlimited knowledge, and unlimited renunciation. Fortune, just to get her favor. Yet the Lord is never attached to her because he could create an unlimited number of such goddesses for his transcendental service. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is sometimes envious of the tulsi leaves, which are placed at the lotus feet of the Lord because they remain fixed there and do not move, whereas Lakshmiji, although stationed by the chest of the Lord, sometimes has to please other devotees who pray for her favor. Lakshmiji sometimes has to go to satisfy her numerous devotees, but tulsi leaves never forsake their position, and the Lord therefore appreciates the service of the Tulasi more than the service of Lakshmi, when the Lord says, therefore, that it is due to the causeless mercy of the brahmanas that Lakshmi does not leave him. We can understand that Lakshmiji is attracted by the opulence of the Lord, not by the brahmanas' benediction upon him. The Lord is not dependent on anyone's mercy for his opulence. He is always self-sufficient. The Lord's statement that his opulence is due to the benediction of the brahmanas and vaishnavas is only to teach others that they should offer respect to the brahmanas and vaishnavas, the devotees of the Lord. Very intricate. So our poetic verse first again, text 20. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, the dust of whose feet is worn on the heads by others, waits upon you as appointed, for she is anxious to secure a place in the abode of the king of bees, who hovers on the fresh wreath of tulsi leaves offered at your feet by some blessed devotee. O Lord, you are exceedingly attached to the activities of your pure devotees, yet you are never attached to the goddesses of fortune or constantly engaged in your transcendental loving service. How can you be pacified, therefore, by the dust of the path traversed by the brahmanas? And how can you be glorified or made fortunate by the marks of Sri Vatsa on your chest? Om Jnana Timurandasya Kananjana Salakaya Chakshuna Miritam Dina tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manovinishtam sthapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa pradhamam dati svat patantikam. These very beautiful verses are spoken by the four kumaras after the incident of their being prevented from entering by Kunta, their cursing of the gatekeepers who didn't permit them to enter, the Supreme Lord hearing of this conflict, has come at once, not sent a messenger, but personally came and spoke to pacify the four Kumaras as Brahmanas. And now they're speaking some words in praise of the Lord. The four Kumaras are characteristically understood to be the bearers of the Lord's Gyan Shakti. They're Shaktivesh avatars. And their discussions on spiritual topics are very elevated. Very elevated. Read prayers by the personified Vedas and your head will spin. It's very elevated. Or in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, they're found by Gopakumar in Tapaloka. And the discussions between the four Kumaras and the other residents there are just... But they're not just... Later, Gopakumar finds them in Vaikuntha and says, wait a minute, I saw you guys down there and now you're there. He said, well, actually, we're residents of Vaikuntha. We just went there to give association. So they're Vaikuntha Vasis. And although they're capable, they're certainly capable of delivering highest, more than subtle teaching, they're kavis, they're very poetic. And the object of their poetic glorification is the lotus feet of the Lord. In such a beautiful way they're describing the lotus feet of the Lord, because he's come before them. And their awakening of their spirit of devotion was just by the scent of the Tulsi buds anointing the lotus feet of the Lord in the sandalwood. And just smelling the fragrance of the Tulsi buds and the sandalwood anointing the Lord's feet has fully awakened their devotional mood and their coveting tendency is now launched. So it's relevant. They're speaking in an appropriate manner, relevant manner to the place they're in, Vaikuntha. So they're making reference to the lotus feet of the Lord in terms of what goes on in Vaikuntha. What goes on in Vaikuntha is there's the goddess of fortune and there's Tulsi leaves, and at least in their poetic expression, there's the king of bees. So as the king of bees is after the fragrance of the Tulsi, and the Tulsi are anointing the lotus feet of the Lord. So the lotus feet of the Lord are the shelter of the Tulsi, which is the attraction of the king of bees. So like the king of Lakshmi is being likened to the king of bees. So she has attraction for the opulences of the Lord, although she herself is a manifestation of the Lord's opulence. She is his enemy. But she's attracted by that aspect of the Lord, his opulent aspect. Specifically, one of the subtle points here is it's not that she stays because with the Lord, because the Brahmanas give their blessings to the Lord, that the goddess of fortune will stay with you, we bless you. She's independent of that. She's attracted to the Lord. She simply wants to serve the Lord. But going the other direction, the Lord, he's very affectionate to the devotees. He likes to serve the brahmanas, like when Sudama came to his palace. He showed the example. He got off his throne and worshipped Krishna, worshipped Sudama as a brahmana, as a kshatriya should respect a brahmana. The deeper understanding is, it's not just because he was a brahmana and Krishna was a kshatriya, it's because of the love of Sudama for Krishna. And Krishna's attracted, or here in text 21 is saying he's attached to the love of his devotees and the loving activities of his devotees. Krishna is conquered. He who is unconquerable, Ajita, becomes conquered. He's unconquered. He's not conquerable. But he has affection so much for the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas that he places himself in that position. Prabhupada is explaining at least one sense of that is he's instructing by his own example how we should honor the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas by showing by his own example you honor the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. But internally, it's his affection for those who are so devoted to him, so elevated in their qualities, that Krishna's, in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes how he is so attracted by the nice qualities of his devotees. But then, where do the nice qualities of the devotees come from? They come from Krishna. Krishna decorates his devotees with nice qualities, then he becomes attracted by those nice qualities. So the emphasis here is going to the opulence of detachment. While he's attracted not specifically to the opulences of his devotees, because for that matter he can manifest unlimited goddesses of fortune for the summation of all of those opulences. Here the word is vibhuti, yambai vibhutir. So we know what vibhuti means from Bhagavad Gita, and also from the first canto of Bhagavatam, this term vibhuti yoga, or opulences of the absolute. Chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita in Sanskrit is vibhuti yoga, opulences of the absolute. So these vibhutis, it's described in first canto, chapter 3 of the Bhagavatam, where the incarnations of the Lord are being described, following the Lila avatars and various other avatars. It's also mentioned vibhutis, and vibhutis are reflections of the Lord's opulences in the spiritual world as they're found in the material world. Those are vibhutis, which Krishna says are but sparks of my splendor. When we were in Mayapur doing our parikrama, visit to places of Mahaprabhu's pastimes, we went to, one of the places we went to was the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas. And in that place where Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas is the samadhi of Gadadhar Das, not Gadadhar Pandit, but Gadadhar Das. And in Kavi Karnapur's Gaura Gunadesh Deepika, it's described that Gadadhar Das is the effulgence of Srimati Radharani. Like Gadadhar Pandit is Srimati Radharani, and Gadadhar Das is the effulgence of Srimati Radharani. As a person, so in front of his samadhi is a picture of Srimati Radharani, and then her effulgence. Gadadhar Das is the effulgence of Srimati Radharani. And that's not a reflection or a spark of Krishna's splendor. That's Krishna's splendor. Gadadhar Das personified. Who can imagine? Elsewhere in Chaitanya Bhagavat is described, or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his explanation in Chaitanya Bhagavat, his commentary about her discussions of Gadadhar Das, that he is the luster of Srimati Radharani. The Sanskrit word is dyuti. Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikritir Radini Shakti Asmat Ekat Manav Bhakti Bhuvi Pura Veda Veda Deha Dapaka Tau Tau. So the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the bhava manifestation of Radha's mood of love for Krishna and the luster or duty. Radha bhava duty subhavitam. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepts the luster and the mood of Radha, but he's Krishna. In the mood. So these are opulences. And Krishna is full of all opulences. All strength, all beauty, all knowledge, all renunciation, all beauty. And all renunciation. In Mahabharata, when the Rajasuya Yajna is being performed, Grandfather Bhishma rises and says, "People honor me because of my renunciation. I took this Gridha Vrata, this very difficult vow that I will not marry and remain childless throughout my life. I'll remain brahmachari. But I say that Krishna's renunciation far surpasses my renunciation. I remain detached and unattracted by staying away from female association. Krishna was surrounded by 16,000 wives and he was fully detached. Krishna's renunciation is vastly superior to my renunciation." Shishupal didn't like that qualification. Or when, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, when Krishna is returning to Dwaraka, and so many series of things happen, one of the things that happens is Krishna enters into the palaces, 16,000 palaces, and he comes before his 16,000 queens, because he expands himself into 16,000 forms. And it's such a beautiful description. They have these sequence of conflicting emotions. They want to run and embrace Krishna, but their shyness checks them. They can't do that. So they send their sons, and Krishna embraces their sons. And they embrace their sons, they feel the same affection as if embraced by Krishna, but they're still having that desire to be in Krishna's company as his loving queen. But from Krishna's side, he is receiving their love and reciprocating with their love, but he's at the same time completely attached. And there's several verses where Sutta is describing to the sages, Krishna is completely detached. So that detached doesn't mean he doesn't care, because Krishna cares. He reciprocates with the love of his devotees. But detached in the sense that his happiness is not determined by that. He's simply reciprocating with the love of his devotees in the various ways. He's full, is the understanding of detachment. He's not depending upon something else for fulfillment, for satisfaction, for happiness, for feeling complete. In this world, that's not the case. At least those who are not perfected souls, there's a sense of incompleteness, and for feeling more complete is some sense of companionship. Prabhupada describes the idea of finding happiness in a relationship is because I'm incomplete and I have to find something outside of myself through some other person or husband, wife, spouse, some relationship, so then I feel some sense of completeness. But Krishna doesn't, one thing is there is no completeness in that because the completeness is found in relationship with Krishna. But for Krishna's sake, he doesn't need anything outside of himself. As mentioned, he can manifest unlimited goddesses of fortune, and by Kunti he does. We find in the Bhagavatam the description where Naranarayan were thought, because of their austerities, that Indra was thinking, uh-oh, they're trying to usurp my position as king. He's always got this insecurity problem. So he sent Kamadeva himself, along with beautiful damsels, the most beautiful damsels from heaven, to break the vrata of Naranarayan Rishi. And when he came before them, Naranarayan, he was ashamed. He deeply and profusely apologized, and the Lord knowingly smiled and stood before Kamadeva and just manifested, what to speak of, desert, beautiful damsels from the heavenly planets. He manifested unlimited goddesses of fortune, like Kamadeva was overwhelmed. So Krishna doesn't, he accepts the love of his devotees, but he's not attracted to and or attached to any of his opulences, because it's one of his opulences is renunciation. And the meaning of that renunciation, once again, is he's full. Prabhupada says it in these two successive purports in the following way. The conclusion is that no one can be the benefactor of the Lord. Everyone is actually the servant of the servant. Krishna's happiness is independent. His sense of fullness is independent. It's not like, now because the goddess of fortune is serving me, I feel complete. I have this mark of Srivats on my chest, and so now I'm ornamented. Rather, as we read in Nectar Devotion, the ornaments themselves become decorated by being on the body of the Lord, rather than the other way around. Ornaments decorate the body of someone. Someone places some, whatever they do, ornamentation, to enhance their beauty. But the ornaments, beauty, become enhanced by being upon the body of Krishna. Or the other way that he says it is, the Lord is not dependent on anyone's mercy for his opulence. He is always self-sufficient. He's Atmaram, he's self-satisfied, and everything that exists is but a manifestation of his energy, and so he's not coveting something he doesn't have, that kind of sense. He doesn't have that, therefore detachment. But he does reciprocate and is attracted to the love of his devotee. In fact, becomes obliged to, purchased by owned by the love of his devotee. Again, we're in our visit to Sri Dhammayapur, this nice expression of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Vasudev Datta in the biographies of Lord Chaitanya describes that he would say again and again in different circumstances, he would repeat it again and again, I am the property of Vasudev Datta. He can do with me whatever he likes. I am his property. He can sell me in the marketplace for whatever price he likes. Do not doubt this. And then he would repeat, I am the property of Vasudev Datta. He owns me and he can do with me whatever he wants. So the mercy, that one sense of this is because of the compassion of Vasudev Datta. That was the compassion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He possessed that compassion of Mahaprabhu, and because of his compassion, he could give Lord Chaitanya's mercy to whoever he likes because of that strength of his compassion without any consideration for himself. Simply compassion, the compassion of Mahaprabhu without consideration for oneself. That's an opulence, great opulence. So the Lord becomes the property, as he said to Durvasa Muni about Maharaj Ambarish. I can't act independently. You've come to me to stop the Sudarshan Chakra, but I can't do anything independent unless Maharaj Ambarish says okay. If he says okay, then I'm his servant. I'll do whatever he says. I can't act independently. As a servant thinks towards the master, I can't act independently. Krishna thinks towards his devotee, I can't act independently. He can, because he's independent. But he places, with the fullness of his independence, he places himself at the disposal of his devotees. Such elevated devotees as Maharaj Ambarish or Vasudev Datta, etc. This is his loving nature. He's so obliged to the loving sentiments of his devotees. So here the four Kumaras are very, very eloquently describing the Lord's independent position. He's come to the gate. He didn't have to come. He came. He came to show example. If someone, as is discussed in this section, if someone is representing you, or if there's someone who's delegated to do some service, Prabhupada taught us like this, if you delegate some service to somebody else and somebody else makes a mistake, then who's responsible? The person who delegated. Tell a little Prabhupada story and we'll end. It happened 2 days in a row in New York, when Prabhupada came in to greet the deities, and then after greeting the deities paid obeisances, and after obeisances went to take Charanamrita, and the Charanamrita was salt instead of sugar. So here's Prabhupada of this stature standing in a circle around all the sannyasis of this height saying, who is responsible for this? And everyone was, you know, pointing to somebody else. Well, it's the Pujari. And who has given the Pujari service? Then he said, you know, you are responsible. This is your responsibility. It's your, you take the blame. He went, sat down with Vyasa Sahib. The same thing happened the next day. Ooh. Everyone went hiding for cover like an atomic bomb is going to explode. It wasn't that. It was instructive. was that Prabhupada is dependent upon the sensation of his tongue. It was instructive that you do a service and you should do it in the proper way. And you delegate some service to someone else. It doesn't mean now you don't have to think about it anymore. You delegate, you have to make sure that it's done properly. Because the one who delegates is held responsible. So the Lord personally came and apologized. Accepting this is my fault because my servants have done this and you've been offended. So I take the blame. Well, anyway, he was showing many things by personally coming, but he was giving his association to these great sages, and the great sages are then showing their appreciation for how great the personality of Godhead is. That even the goddess of fortune, who everyone is after, who doesn't want to be wealthy? There's some people that don't want to be wealthy. They want something of blessing that may come from the goddess of fortune. And so, but she is after the lotus feet of the Lord, and she's even wishing that she could have that same steadiness as Tulsi, but Tulsi never leaves the lotus feet of the Lord. She has to sometimes go and take care of people asking her for something. Chanchala. But not at the lotus feet of the Lord. She's attached. And his opulence is independent, is self-sufficient. Okay, any questions or discussion? Yeah.
It seems corollary that if someone has all the opulences, he would naturally be renounced.
It seems which?
It's a corollary that if Krishna has all the opulences, then he also has to be renounced.
Well, why is that so?
Because if someone has everything, then what is the meaning of it being attached to something and not attached to something? Because there's nothing really that is a problem.
This is your transcendental logic.
I can't understand the question.
Huh?
I can't.
It's not a question, he's making a comment. The comment is, one who has everything, it would naturally follow that they're detached, renounced. As opposed to someone that doesn't have everything and they want something. A little bit they have, they're attached and they want more. But someone that has literally everything, then it would stand to reason. They're detached. They're not wanting anything. They already have everything.
Yeah.
Well, that's just, you know, construct an imaginary person that has everything and is attached to that everything they have. You know, whatever is the most wealthy person that exists today or ever existed, it's the nature of a fallible person that they're jealously guarding that which they have. They don't want people to take it from them. But that's not Krishna. This is another of Krishna's transcendental opulences. So, you know, an argument could be made, it would stand to reason, that as we find most people have something, they're attached to that something. And the more they have, the more they have, the more detached from that something. The more they're attached to that something. And they have everything, and they're going to guard that everything that they have. They're going to get a big stick and keep people away. Yes?
Well, there are different definitions. When we use the word English, attached and detached, raga, vairaga. So there are different. When we talk about Krishna being unattached, we don't necessarily mean that he's fearful that someone's going to take something away from him. It also means that the consequences of owning everything, he's not attached to the consequences, such as being proud of being the proprietor of the possession. view that in spite of owning everything, control of everything, Krishna's not proud. Of course, he's not fearful. He's also not proud of it.
My watch has stopped. What time is it?
8:24.
Anything else? Yeah.
What exactly is the mistake of the gatekeepers in this whole pastime? Because if someone were to come including into the Lord's service, it seems that they're duty bound to check them.
Well, there was no mistake. In one sense, there was no mistake. In another sense, the mistake, there's three things. In another sense, the mistake was they were actually qualified. And they were prevented from entering, although they were actually qualified, and that was their mistake. And the third understanding is it's just a lila. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that Jai and Vijay, they were, and there's more, Jai and Vijay were praying to the Lord from within their heart. We know that you like to have some combat, but who is qualified to have combat with you? But you have that desire, an unfulfilled desire. If you so desire, we would like to fulfill that desire. If you so desire, we will fill that desire for you. But we need to be in this position where we're, you know, an opposition to you, to be in combat with you. So if you like, you can make that arrangement. So as to fulfill the desire of his devotee, two devotees, he made this arrangement. They made no mistake. They made a mistake. It's just a lila. And it gets more involved. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes. They weren't only posted at the gate of Vaikuntha, sometimes they were at the door of Lord Narayan. So one time, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, the Lord wanted to rest, and so he told Jai and Vijay, don't let anybody come in. For the goddess of fortune came at the wrong time, and they said, you can't come. So she became very upset. She didn't say anything, but later she spoke to Narayan, you should chastise these men. And he didn't say anything to her. No, you know, they were just doing instructing them. They did exactly as I was instructing them to do, but now Lakshmi is unhappy. So somehow I have to fulfill that. And so that fulfillment of that was he then cursed them. So she was happy, they were happy, the Lord was happy, everything orchestrated in very wonderful way by their making a mistake which was no mistake. Do you all follow that? Yes.
I don't know if this is really a relevant question or statement, but it's really hard to understand how when we use words like lila, this is the Lord's lila, how it's a drama at the same time the Lord actually feels it. It's not like he's just acting it out.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's a drama, it's, you know, showed by example and all of this. I don't know if it's really relevant, but it's very difficult to understand. Particularly when you're trying to explain it to
others. Just become Krishna conscious and it'll be easy to understand. You can't understand by figuring it out kind of understanding. It's rasa. But it's not only you that can't understand. Queen Kunti can't understand. And she's more qualified than you. And she can't understand. The stick in the hand of Mother Jasoda, if it was just like a drama, like Krishna's going, oh, I'm supposed to cry now. Because here comes Mother Jasoda with a stick. That's what it says in the script. So now I'm supposed to cry. So he cries. But not just like that. He was fearful of the stick in Mother Jasoda's hand. Queen Kunti says, that I can't understand. And that's lila. It's not just drama. It's lila. It's a reciprocation of the love. And Krishna likes being afraid of the stick in Mother Jasoda's hand. And so because Krishna likes, she does. And because it's also lila, when she sees Krishna cry, she throws the stick. And then she... It's lila. It's just a cascading flow of exchanging of loving emotions with his devotees. And being tied so that he can fulfill the words of Narada. His two sons of Kuvera are going to be delivered. So now Krishna sees, okay, now it's a good time to do that one. That he's conscious, but it's at the same time, it's the reciprocation of loving affairs. That's lila. That's what it means. And how do we understand loving affairs? Become pure. A lover of Krishna. To some extent we can understand. Okay, thank you very much.